Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We're sitting in the basement again. This is turning into like the COVID year. It's just hanging out at home after hours on a couch somewhere.
In my defense, I am still recovering. It's only been just over 2 weeks since my surgery.
I guess that's a good reason.
There's a very good reason that I'm not. I do go to the office, though. I haven't been at home the entire time, but late night recordings, like by this time of night, I have no energy left because I've not been taking my own advice or anybody's advice. And I've just been like living normal life as if I'm, you know, not still healing from major abdominal surgery. So, we're on the couch again because I need to rest. I've got my feet up. I'm in my fuzzy robe and my fuzzy blanket. And I'm actually very happy that I'm like super comfortable right now because the topic tonight is rather serious. I'm going to put a trigger warning like immediately at the top of the episode, but we are talking about things that are very real and could happen. Safety when it comes to RMTs, specifically female RMTs, having a presence online. I shouldn't just say RMTs because I believe our guest is not an RMT, but you know, a massage LMT. Therapist somewhere. And she has some really very real stories of things that she's, you know, presently dealing with and just the terrifying things that could potentially happen and dangers and risks and things that we should be looking out for. And this is not to scare anyone, of course, but this is just reality of when you have, when you have a presence in online space and some people might get too attached, might take things too far. And that's where we're going.
So like was it Rebecca who was on our podcast just recently? An episode that came out. Our guest, I had spoken with our guest a little bit on a social platform, just messaging back and forth, like as we check in every once in a while, how you doing, blah, 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 blah. And our guest proceeded to tell me this really kind of crazy story. And that was in my mind a lot for that podcast episode that we did with Rebecca, who got in touch with us because she has a rapidly growing online presence on like TikTok and Instagram and all that kind of stuff. And then I brought up some of the potential security issues, especially associated with our business, where we tend to plaster ourselves all online. And then we also, if you're into the social thing, we also put out a lot of content. And especially when, you know, and it's normal for a business to put out content that is not just strictly business, but also little splashes of personal, right? That's also something that most digital marketers will say that's a fabulous idea to do. And I'm not saying it's a bad idea. It's a good idea. But there are also things that we want to keep in mind when we're doing so, especially when we paint ourselves all over the interweb, as we do in our podcast and in Condit Institute and Massage Therapy Media. But as I suggested on that podcast with Rebecca, like what we do is a little different where, you know, it's not someone that can just necessarily get to us and be with us alone like they can as a massage therapist.
Yeah.
So I had our guest in my mind a lot during that talk. And even to the point where, Amanda, I think you kind of looked at me sometime during that to be like, where are you going?
Oh, man.
With this?
Okay. So, our guest tonight, Max, is going to tell us her story. But basically, I had no idea that Max and Mark had been talking. Like, she's also somebody I know. I didn't know that they were having a discussion about this prior to our recording with Rebecca. So, Max, I don't know if you heard the episode, but Mark was like saying some stuff that I was like, wow, this is like, why are you bringing this up? Like he was talking about, you know, like, what if this goes too far? And have you ever had a stalker and this? And I was like, why are you saying this to this, you know, this woman who has created this really great TikTok following?
Right.
Like, you know, we're trying to celebrate her online presence.
We are. And we did.
And I was so confused. And I'm looking at him like, where is this coming from? And then after we wrapped up the episode, he's like, oh, do I have a story for you?
Right. So in that episode, I talked a little bit about when I was teaching massage therapy school, how I had many students who their partners had a big problem with them being in massage school and wanting to become massage therapists. And actually, a lot of their relationships went south. I told the story just really briefly how I had a student whose boyfriend at the time would drive her to school, would hang out all day, to make sure nothing weird's going on, and then pick her up and take her home. And it got to a point where that was not even good enough for him. He had no intention on becoming a massage therapist, but he paid the tuition to join the program to always be around her. And so we spoke about that a little bit. And so again, you were in my mind for that. And then just recently, in a massage therapy Facebook group.
Oh, the post, yeah.
We saw someone posting how their partner really doesn't like them doing massage work and equates it to sex work.
Yeah.
And has a major problem with the work that they're doing.
Well, the interesting thing about...
This all just kind of came in all at the same time.
It did come around the same time. But the interesting thing about that post, and I guess, you know, Max, we can talk about that once you get into your story, but that poster remained anonymous and said, you know, I'm not looking for relationship advice. I just want to talk about, they wanted to talk about advertising that another clinic was doing because it was making massage therapy look right. sexual. And it was like, you know, what can we do to stop this? And of course, people are chiming in saying, this is not an advertising problem. This is a toxic relationship. And this is an issue that your partner has with your job. So Max, I'm going to hand the mic over to you, maybe just to give us a little backstory of what you recently dealt with both a, I guess, jealous might be the right word. You might have some other choice words for this person, but a jealous partner that then turned into an unsafe situation for yourself where you had to erase yourself from online.
Yeah. So recently I got a new partner, I guess you could call it. It was never really even anything official. And we were seeing each other casually for about 2 months. And at some point throughout that, he convinced me that I need to change careers. What I'm doing isn't a career. Massage therapy isn't anything to be proud of. He told me, what are your kids going to think when you have kids one day? Are they going to be proud that their mom's a massage therapist? Told me that my job was sex work. He was convinced that it was sex work because he has gone to a place that he's received a happy ending massage at before. He's convinced they're all like that. And I primarily do medical massage. Mm-hmm. I work with insurance and people that have true medical needs for it. But he knows what he knows about massage therapy from his personal experiences. So he was convinced that I was doing sex work. And he hated it. I couldn't mention a male client's name around him or anything of the sort. He wanted me to go female only clientele if I was going to stay in it. It was just super unhealthy. Had an experience with him where he got very upset with me over something not related to massage and gave me the worst 24 hours of my life. Mental, physical, emotional abuse, and it was very challenging to deal with. And I erased myself from the internet so he could not find me. And now that includes my massage pages, being self-employed as a massage therapist. I no longer am advertising online. I removed every Instagram that I have. My social media's remaining went completely private and shut down. And this isn't the first time I've thought about doing this. I've had clients kind of turn into stalkers before, but this one was just a little more severe that I was afraid for my safety more than, okay, this is just a creepy guy that's annoying me that was like a client in the past.
Okay, can I pause you for a sec? I want to ask a few questions that I'm sure people are thinking right
and
now.
And if we're ever going down a road that you're like, fuck, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, you don't have to answer anything.
Do not hesitate to say, fuck off, guys. I don't want to go down there.
So just from your introduction of this person, you said, you know, you'd been seeing each other casually for a couple of months, but the way, maybe it was just the way you phrased this, you said, he convinced me that massage therapy was not anything to be proud of. When you say, like, were you actually questioning yourself, questioning your career choices? Were you actually thinking like, huh, is this something that I would be proud of if I have a family one day? Would I be proud to tell my children that this is what I do for a living? Or is there something shameful in what I'm doing?
I don't think there's anything shameful in what I do. But he made me feel like everything that I was doing in my life was terrible. He made comments about different aspects of my body that he wishes he could change, different aspects of my personality that he wishes he could change, my career, the things that I do, the area that I live in. And then I got to a point where I'm like, why are you spending time with me if you want to change literally everything about me?
Right. Did you, though, as he's saying all this stuff to you, like, was it shaking your confidence? Like, were you feeling like he had a point in some areas? Like, the reason I'm asking this is I have interacted with you before. I do know you. And you never really struck me as the type of person that would even honestly give two shits about what some dude who you'd only been seeing for a couple of months would say. But I mean, you stuck around for a little longer. So was he getting under your skin? Was he making you think that, maybe it is me? Like, I don't know. I know there's just some people that have the ability to make the other person who's not doing anything wrong feel like maybe I am doing something wrong. Maybe it is me.
Honestly, he made me feel like I had all of these issues in my life, all of these things that needed to change. And the only way that I was going to be able to change them and be successful in life is if I stuck with him and he was going to help me. He made me feel like he was my only option in achieving a successful life.
You're broken and I'm your savior and you need me.
If
you want to be on the right side of things.
Okay.
Did he know that you were a massage therapist? Like, how far into the relationship did it come out that you were a massage therapist? Like, is this something that he knew right off the bat type of thing?
He knew right off the bat.
And did he act like he was okay with it initially, or was he right off the bat like, yeah, no partner of mine's doing that?
No, in the beginning, he's like, you do admirable work. You work with the VA, you do medical massage, you're helping people, like you do good things for good people, you help people feel better. And then it slowly started slipping into the negative.
Mm-hmm. So when he was saying that, you know, I've been for massage, I know what they do, and they, you know, they all end in happy endings. Was there like ever a point where anything you were saying, like, was he just shutting down any argument you had where you're like, you know, I do medical massage, you know, I work with, you know, specific conditions and I do treatments and like, there's nothing sexual about what I do. Like, how is he coming back at that? No, like you said, he knew from the beginning what you did.
Everyone asked me why I stuck around for even 2 months, but when I tell you that he was the type of man that if you started saying anything contrary to what he was saying, if you didn't agree with him, especially a woman, he would just look at you and say, shut the fuck up. I'm talking. You're not talking right now. I'm talking. And there were days that I couldn't talk for more than 2 seconds without being cut off. And that would go on for hours. About anything in life. He was just that type of guy. It was his way or the highway. And I jumped on the highway a little too late.
At the beginning of the relationship, were there any signs of like, this is one super controlling type of person? Were there any signs of that, or is it like in retrospect now you can kind of see some of the things, but in the moment it wasn't so apparent?
In the moment, I didn't see it. And even looking back in the very beginning, I don't know if I saw it, but it's like once he felt like he had me, everything flipped.
Yeah.
He was a completely different person for the first few weeks, and then everything flipped and it was a very negative 2 to 3 weeks, and then the worst 24 hours of my life. And now I'm dealing with that.
You hear this story a lot and it's really scary. And I just want people who are listening, who are thinking like, nah, man, the minute he did that, shut the fuck up, I'm talking, I would have been out of there. Like, I think it's really easy to say that when you're on the outside or when you're on the other side of it. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm saying that is I know a lot of really intelligent, strong, like, powerful women mm-hmm. who have gotten into scenarios where it starts out exactly like that. The charming guy who, you know, makes you believe that he is, you know, he's safe and he's going to be somebody who's, yeah, like he's the most charming. And, you know, I don't like to throw around the word narcissist because I know it gets thrown around all the time, but that's, I've known people who have been with actual narcissists. I've known with people who have been with pathological liars. And it always starts with like, they first have to present their absolute best self, right? Mm-hmm. Like, look, because then they get you like believing well, that they
your trust
yeah, and they build up your trust and you finally feel like, okay, I can let my guard down. I can be vulnerable and this and that and whatever. And then once you're in that spot, like, you know, like Max said, once he felt like he had her, then it's okay. Now I'm going to change everything about you to turn you into the woman I want you to be. Like they have a very, and I'm saying they, I'm, you know, generalizing here, but this type of man, because I've, like I said, I've seen this scenario play out before where it starts out where they're the best guy in the world and then they turn into the scariest person in the world. And suddenly you're like, how the fuck did I get here? Mm-hmm. How am I with this person who I thought was, you know, going to look out for me and take care of me and love me and is now terrified?
I mean, I know nothing about psychology, but to me, it sounds like someone like that, like nothing's by accident.
No.
That is, I'm going to prey on somebody mm-hmm. that I feel I can have this type of influence on. And however you determine that, I wouldn't know. But something like that doesn't come out by accident. That's years and years and years of practice.
Yeah.
I would think so. When do you get scared? I recognize you've had that worst 24 hours that you've kind of brought up a couple times. But is any time leading up prior to this, like you're actually getting scared and you're feeling unsafe, or is it just like you're just kind of feeling like I'm constantly in argument mode, I'm constantly just having to defend my actions and what I do to this person? And is when does the fear come in, if it did come in prior to the 24 hours you reference?
The fear didn't come in any time prior. He put me down a lot, but he never made me feel like I was going to be hurt. I mean, minus, you know, emotionally and mentally, how much he wore me down. Looking back at that, he definitely was like progressively wearing me down in that way. But once it was like, it was that one moment that he found something out and he completely switched and went to a person that I didn't recognize. And it's so interesting because, like, you don't know how bad something like that is until you live it yourself. And I literally had to, like, within the first 24 hours, had to sit down and type out everything that happened because it started feeling like a fever dream. It started feeling fake. And I'm like, I don't ever want to forget what happened as much as I would love to forget it. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to forget it because I don't want to forget who this person truly is and what the things that they're capable of doing. And I also wanted that in case I ever decided to do anything legally, because I haven't, because I'm still scared. And everyone's like, but go get a restraining order or go make a police report or do whatever you're going to do legally. But it's like, man, the police can't show up as fast as a gun's fired. And he's not the type of person that, I mean, Mark, you read the message. Don't F with me or I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to risk that. So I feel like a sitting duck. And I'm at a point where I was considering changing my phone number because he's been blocked on everything. But every time I would block him, he would create a new phone number to message me. Mm. And I've gotten texts from 3 new phone numbers. I've gotten things sent to my house. And I'm like, do I need to change my phone number? Do I need to move? Do I need to change jobs so he doesn't know where I'm at? I'm like, do I need to change my name? But man, I feel like I just need to restart life.
Yeah. And then in these 2 months, because I kind of know this part of the story, but it's also very stereotypical, is the mental and emotional beatdown, mm-hmm. followed by the I love you.
Yeah.
Right? Followed by the make you feel good. And then followed again by the emotional mental breakdown. Yep. And it's just this cycle that just kind of just digs the hole deeper and deeper, just like one shovel piece at a time, right? It's a cycle.
And that's what I was saying is it's easy to be on the outside looking in and saying, run away.
Right.
But there's a very specific way that people like this, that abusive people, get you to believe that they're looking out for your best interest and they care about you. And, oh, I got really heated and passionate, but that's not really me. And I love you.
I'm doing this out of love.
And then the cycle continues.
I'm doing this for us.
Yeah.
That type of thing. When this is going on, in these months that you're dating, does this actually start to affect your practice in that, okay, maybe just to keep the peace, I'm not going to see as many male clients, or I'm not going to have male clients at all. Or to keep the peace, I'm going to inform you as to when a male books with me or someone says, does it actually start to change what you're doing at your workplace?
I cut back on taking clients. I was probably taking a quarter of the clients I was previously. I wasn't taking any new male clients. I stopped responding to several of my male clients and stopped booking them. So it definitely affected my practice, and it affected me financially greatly. And it's so funny that he's convinced it was sex work, but I'm like, hey, there's times that I'm struggling to pay my bills. You think if I was doing sex work, I'd be making a little bit more money and not have an issue paying my bills.
Do you think all of that is also part of, I know we're just speculating here. Do you think all that is part of the extra bit of control?
Yes. I was just going
to
say that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like I don't want you to see male clients, and then therefore you slow down your practice, and therefore it affects your income. And now it creates even a larger dependence.
See, I was already thinking that because, and again, every situation is different. I don't know this person that Max is talking about, but I do know a therapist, and I've brought this up on other episodes, who has a partner who, you know, tries to tell her that what she does is sex work. I don't want you treating men, this, that, whatever. Meanwhile, like, he's gone for massage therapy before. He should know better. And that's the thing, is I'm like, he does know better. He does know what she's doing is not sex work, but he does like to have a certain amount of control over her. People around her can see that. It's very, very apparent to us that he likes to keep her under his radar, like, all the time.
And then she complies to keep the peace.
And she complies to keep the peace because he beats her down mentally, emotionally, exactly what Max was saying. Anytime.
And then she feels it's easier just to give
it's
in.
It's just easier. So basically, she no longer responds to certain male clients, whatever. Like, her practice has suffered over and over again because he will lose his mind if somebody, even with a male sounding name, like, there was one time it was legitimately a woman sending her a message, like a request for treatment, but with sort of an ambiguous name. Yeah. And he, like, lost his shit And she was like, this is a girl. Like, I don't even know what to say to you. Like, this, I'm not treating men. But the fact that she even had to stop treating men, I mean, I've had conversations with her. And like, you can't tell somebody what to do. She's an adult. She's making her decisions. But I'm like, this is so sad. Like, you could be so successful as a therapist. And it's like, I can see that she's not 100% happy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, their situation's a little bit different where there's, you know, children involved.
Property and children.
Yeah.
And all the rest
so,
of it,
so she stays and she keeps the peace and, you know, just tries to convince him over and over again that what she's doing is not sex work. She's considered just leaving the profession multiple times because that would just be easier. But then he also, again, going into just control, he also has problems with pretty much anything. Like, basically, she cannot have conversations with men. So again, it's not even about, like, again, I don't know about with Max's person, but I don't know that it was ever about massage being the problem. It was, I want to control you. I don't want you talking to men. So what if you worked as a server? Would he have a problem with that? Probably.
So Max, did this extend well beyond the work of the massage therapy?
The control aspect?
Yeah.
Yeah, he tried to control a lot of things in my life. You know, the night that he freaked out, he's like, you know, if you were just good, in 6 months we would have been engaged and we would have been married and we would have been living together and traveling the world together. And I'm like, thank God I didn't marry you.
If you were just good. See, it's just about comply, listen to me, do what I say. And you'll live a happy life and I will take you all over the place and pay for things.
So how do we get from all of the emotional and mental abuse to this person is not really there anymore? What are the steps involved? Your steps involved?
Yeah, like you don't have to tell us necessarily about all the details of this worst 24 hours, but how did you make the decision that I got to get out of here, and how
and what did you do?
Once I was able to physically remove myself from the situation, I went home. First thing I did the next day was I deactivated my personal Instagram and my business Instagram, and I made my Facebook extremely private. Like, if you were to look at it as an outsider, I'm pretty sure at this point you can see one profile picture, like none of my old ones, my cover photo, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. I've blocked every number that he texts me from. Like I said, still considering changing my phone number, because this happened just a few weeks ago, but thankfully, haven't heard from him in about 2 weeks now. But it's, I have talked to a lawyer. I have talked to police about next steps if needed. So I'm at least educated on what to do next if I need to do that. But I am afraid of any form of retaliation. Now, what's awful about it is my business has been suffering for the last 2 months because I stopped responding to a lot of clients. I cut down my clientele to about 25% of what it was. And that's been a big struggle for me. Going back to, I have a job out related to massage outside of taking clients, and my time there I've cut back because that's also been hard mentally for me to be there. I've been limiting my time at my home. If my roommate's not home, I don't want to be there. I don't want to be at my place of work by myself, which is very rare. But I don't want to be at my place of work by myself. I don't want to be anywhere by myself at this point. And even though he lives pretty far away, the area that I do live in is still, you know, it's a small world no matter where you live. And you can always run into people.
You're still constantly feeling like I'm looking over my shoulder all the time.
Looking over my shoulder all the time. Receiving a package at my door, I'm constantly checking now, and happened twice, but I'm like constantly checking my doorstep to see if there's something there, not because I want it to be there. I'm not hoping that there's something there, but I'm dreading the day that something does show up. And because the next time something happens, it's stepping into a DVRO, which is a domestic violence restraining order.
So after you got away, which I, you know, we'll get back into that, once you could physically remove yourself and you left, based on what you're saying, it sounds like he is still trying to contact you and he's sending you things. Like, is he sending you things that are like apologetic? Is he sending you things like, you know, come back to me? Is he angry? Like, what is he trying to get out of contacting you?
Probably, I think he's upset that he lost control over the situation. So the first thing that I received was flowers and a teddy bear the day after I got back to my house. And any of the texts that I've received are just one word. And it's the same text every single time. And I know it's from him. But if you were an outsider looking in, you'd be like, that could be from anyone. Right. Because he's been very strategic in not signing anything that he sent. He's not putting his name on anything. He's not sending anything that's like provable that it's him.
So you think that him trying to contact you is like because he lost control, like he still wants to have some sort of control, like over you or just over the whole situation, like because it wasn't his decision for you to leave. So he had no control.
Yeah. And he's also told one of my friends that I'm going to strategically mess with her for the next few months or year or something. I'm going to send her a text every few weeks just so she thinks about me again. And so he's already blurted out that, you know, he's doing this strategically to continue to emotionally damage me.
Yeah, change your number, girl.
And this also at some point also got physical too, right?
He got physical with you.
So you can understand the level of how scared someone might be in this scenario.
And so I know we started this by talking about, you know, having a huge online presence. Like this situation is obviously unique in that this is somebody you were sort of in a relationship with, and then, you know, you had to disappear because fear of, you know, this person finding you. And, you know, obviously he's trying to, and he's trying to contact you. But you had mentioned at the beginning of the episode that, you know, the disappearing from online is not something that you only just thought of this time. Like, you've had clients turn into stalkers. And like I said, when we were talking with Rebecca the other day, and Mark got all serious about, you know, like women need to be careful in this industry. And it's not that I hadn't thought about it, but really and truly, our faces,
that's the thing.
Videos of us performing treatments,
so,
talking, like we're all over the internet with our phone numbers, our emails, exactly. Our socials, like everything is there.
Because you, as a therapist, you don't necessarily have to be, right? You don't have to be plastered all over the internet. And I brought it up specifically with Rebecca because she is creating and wants to create a very large online following.
Yeah.
Therefore, she pumps out content like crazy, which means everywhere you turn, you'll be able to find her really easily. Like there's some cats that we know that have their clinic or have a mobile business or have a home-based business, and they don't have a large internet presence. So there's a little bit of safety there where if I kind of don't want to be found, I'm a little bit more hard to find than someone as soon as I open up my TikTok, like there they are.
There's also a lot of female therapists that we know personally that do have a pretty strong online presence. And, you know, although they are aware of what they post and they're not posting a ton of personal stuff, like I said, their phone number, their address, like everything is all, I mean, and that's with almost any business, but because of the fact that we're in a business where somebody can book an appointment with you and they end up in a room alone with you.
Right. And you might not have any type of real screening process before that even happens. And it's typical in our business that you don't, right? Yeah. And so I think this is important that people hear. I think there's a lot of, I really believe that there's a lot of therapists that go through this type of thing, maybe not to this extent or maybe even this extent and beyond. But I actually, the more I think about it, I think it's a lot more common than we even thought it to be before.
Yeah. I mean, we've asked people questions about, you know, like creepy clients and whatever. And I mean, Mark, as a male therapist, has had somebody, when we were first dating, I don't know if you remember this, somebody who was stalking him and leaving him gifts on his car.
Yep.
And honestly, I got scared because I'm like, I'm in the way. Like, I'm the problem. She wants him and I'm the problem.
I've told this story before.
I was fucking terrified.
Like, it's a Saturday. I forgot something at my workplace, and so I go to my workplace early Saturday morning. I'm talking like 8:30 in the morning.
Which he should have never been there.
And I'm not supposed to be there. And I go to open my car door, and this person is standing outside of my driver's side door, just standing there. And I didn't notice because, like, I'm just going about my day. And I open the door, and this person is just standing right there. And that kind of freaked me out. Like, I'm not supposed to be here. It's 8:30 in the morning. It's a Saturday.
Like, how did you know
how did you know I'm even here? Right? So.
Yeah, stalkers are one thing and very scary. So, Max, you said you did have clients who got, like, a little too friendly. Like, were they people that gave you red flags right off the bat in treatment? Or it was, like, over time, maybe they thought you guys were more than therapist client and got a little too close?
The one client that comes to mind, he was my client for about a year and a half, seeing him biweekly or every 3 weeks. And he was fairly normal, never gave me any red flags until one session he said something that made me pretty uncomfortable. You know, I was working right arm, and he just had it very stiff, like holding it straight out, like all the muscles were engaged, and that's not like him at all. And I tried everything I could to get him to relax, and I finally gave up and moved on to the other arm, and it was fine. And he's like, haha, I guess you just have to beat me into submission. And I was like, we're not gonna say those things. And he kind of pushed it a little bit. And I ended the treatment. I was like, you know, like, I did specify that I was clearly uncomfortable with that comment. And I don't appreciate you saying it. I don't think it's a good idea for me to be your therapist any longer. Besides that comment, he would continually give me like handwritten cards with notes that are like, you're my best friend, even though I never spoke to him outside of the treatment room. And so there was, okay, I guess there were red flags leading up to it. But after I had a conversation with him, I said, I think you need to find another therapist because I will not be working on you any longer. And he's like, yeah, so I think we'll just take a break for a few months. And then in about 3 months, I'll rebook with you and we can start all over. And I was like, we're not taking a break. You're not my client any longer. This isn't a relationship. There's no taking a break. Mm. He found my other work and sent flowers there to my other job. He found my personal Instagram that was super private and tried following me on there. And I ended up blocking him. Recently, he sent me a message on my personal Facebook and I had to block him on there. And I'm like, I haven't seen him in over a year and a half and he's still pushing, trying to find my personal social medias. And it's like, when does it end?
That is the scary thing about social media. Years ago, like I'm talking like, I don't know, early in my career, within the first year, I think, I was treating at a couple of different clinics and I was working with this one guy. And when I say there were zero red flags, like, to be honest with you, I wasn't even 100% certain that this guy was straight. Like, I never would have thought that he was like, would have been interested in me or would have been like, never. Like, right. There was zero red flags. He seemed like the most normal person. And he never said anything creepy. He never did anything creepy. But one night I was going to visit a friend and I was parked outside. She worked at a gym and I was parked outside of her gym. And I was just like sort of scrolling through my phone, waiting for her to be done work. And I all of a sudden I have a message from this guy and I recognize his name. He's a client and I see the picture, but it was on one of my personal accounts. And the reason I was so creeped out by this is my personal account and my work account, I don't have the same name. Like, how did you even know my name? I had never told him that. Like, we never had personal conversations in treatments. So I was like, how did you find me? Mm. Like, he didn't message me through a work Facebook or Instagram. It was like my personal Instagram. That's weird. And so from there, I was like, okay, well, I need to block this guy and never rebook him again because that's weird. And it was like, not even like a creepy message, but why are you sending me a message at like 9 PM? Like, hey, how are you? But like, we're not friends. Like, you're my client and you're messaging me on my personal account. Like, the minute that happened, I was like, nope, we're done here. It's scary. Social media is scary.
It's not just that. Then it really sucks because then it spills into like your life. Like, we've had, like, I think it was when Nikki was on one time. And we were talking about this kind of stuff. And then she made me like really realize it kind of sucks sometimes to be a chick that way. Like, I get into an elevator, I don't think twice about it. I'm just like in an elevator. I don't feel hypervigilant about what's going on. What are my surroundings? I walk through an underground garage. I just go to my car. Like, I just don't think about that kind of stuff. So it just really kind of opened my eyes to like, oh man, there's a whole other world that I don't even think about
about that kind of stuff. We're always very, very aware of things. I mean, I joke often that like I'm the least observant person in the world. I'm not observant when it comes to things that to me don't matter. So for example, you know, I might hang out with someone and like Mark and I might meet a couple and then later he'll be like, yeah, the husband had like that really cool car. I'm like, I don't know. It was black. Like, I would never observe what kind of car it was. But if I'm out somewhere by myself, especially if it's after dark, I can tell you like what cars were in that parking lot, who was where. Like, then I'm paying attention because I never know. Like, I go for a walk in our neighborhood almost every day, like a 30 to 45 minute walk. And even though I have music in, I know if someone's walking behind me. Like, I was very aware of like the high school kids that were like hanging out by the stream while I was walking. Like, I'm always paying attention to what's going on around me. You would just walk.
I would just walk.
Yeah.
So you brought up earlier that if you wanted to know what the next steps would be from a lawyer and from police services, what were they saying that if you wanted to take a step, what would that step be?
I got some mixed advice. So I might be looking for a third party to kind of clarify a little bit. Of course, a lawyer is like, don't worry about it. I can take care of everything. This didn't happen in my home city. This happened while I was away. Mm-hmm. So the police officer that I talked to was like, you have to handle everything that happened in the city that it happened in. Mm-hmm. So you have to file a police report in the city that this all originated in. But because things have carried home to the things being delivered to my home and the text messages and everything along those lines, the first advice they gave me was just file a harassment report with the local police. No one gets notified, but it's at least on record at that point that you're experiencing the harassment from a particular person. In case anything ever happens in the future, then it's already documented that this, it's an, been an ongoing thing and you've been actively trying to get ahead of it. So their first piece of advice was to just file a harassment report with the local police. No one's notified. The other party isn't notified that you filed the report, but it's just documentation to help you in case you need it in the future. So if there's anyone that's listening that is experiencing any sort of stalking or harassment, whether it's personal or with clients, if you need to, if you feel the slightest urge that you're uncomfortable or unsafe, just file the report with your local police. No, they're not going to tell that person, but you have that documentation just in case anything ever does happen. It's just to help you in the future. And if you never need it, great. That's wonderful that you never needed it. But if you need it and don't have it, you're going to wish you filed it.
Yeah. Well, I really think this fucking sucks that we're even having this conversation and not having like a fun, lighthearted conversation about massage. I mean, I'm sorry that you have to deal with this and that you're still in the middle of this need to constantly look over your shoulder. I mean, I hope you do change your number. I hope you do get away from this person and that he can't find where you are. But also, like, I don't know, Mark, now she's had to erase herself. Like, how do you rebuild a massage practice having erased yourself?
And I think a bigger question is, like, do you even want to? You know what I mean? You've already seen kind of like the worst of it. It's like, do I even want to go back and do that again? You know what I mean? So how are you though right now? Like, how are you?
I'm okay now. If you asked me in the first like 3 days following the event, I couldn't talk without crying and it's still tough, but I have a really strong support system with my friends and family, which is something that he also tried to take down during this whole thing. He tried to alienate me from all of my friends and family. And I'm just so thankful that I have a strong support system and they've been there for me. And I've had people that I've been able to talk to about what's happened, and therapy's great. So being able to talk about it is the only thing that's going to help heal me. I'm never going to understand the whys behind his actions. No one ever will, except him. So I'm not going to try to drive myself crazy figuring out why. But I'm taking life day by day and watching my back around every corner more than I did previously. And yeah.
How did the men in your life react to all of this?
My dad still doesn't know.
Okay. Because I was about to say, I've got two daughters and I'm not a tough guy by any stretch of the imagination, but I think I would go fucking apeshit.
Mark has already told me to keep bail money aside just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad doesn't know, because if my dad knew, then he would absolutely be in prison. And my brother and his best friend were in communication with me the night it happened. They were pretty much the only people that I was communicating with, because in this process, my phone was damaged and I had no use of my phone. So I could only use a computer once I was given Wi-Fi. So at one point my brother FaceTimed me, and the computer was turned towards me, and he sat on the other side, and my brother FaceTimed me, and he's like, "Are you okay? No one can get a hold of you. No one's been able to talk to you. Your location like fell off. Find my friends." And I just like remember looking up and seeing him staring at me. And I just had to look at my brother on FaceTime and be like, "I'm okay." I was not okay. And my brother knew, but he couldn't do anything in that moment. We were pretty far from each other, not a comfortable driving distance. And the next day when I was away, I called my brother, and he's like, "It literally felt like you were in a hostage terrorist situation, talking to you on FaceTime, like someone was telling you exactly what to say." Mm-hmm. My brother and his best friend were ready to fly out and probably end up in prison. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the men in my life are not happy. And no one's upset with me. But of course, also my mother is like, I love her to death, but she's like, "You know, never had a good feeling about him." And I was like, "Thanks for warning me, Mom." Mm.
Not the time, Mom. Not the time.
I wonder if our kids, even when they were small, I was like, we have this code word for stuff, guys. If you're ever in trouble and I ask you this question, like, this is how you answer, or you say this thing, and I'm like, that's how I know, like, something's going on, and I gotta come to where you are immediately. I wonder if they still remember.
There's that's a real thing now, because there are, I don't know, growing up now is different than when we were kids, we're old. But there's, I saw a post recently on Instagram or something, and there was a parent, I think it was a dad and son. And the dad said, like, if you're ever in a situation where you're somewhere and you just need me to get you out of there and like make it my fault, so it's not like you called me, he's like, text me any random emoji. And I'll know, like, if we weren't talking and you text me a random emoji, I need to get you out of there. And so his son had gone for like a sleepover or something. And all of a sudden he gets a text from his son, and it's just a hot dog emoji. And he's like, shit. Okay. So he then calls his son and starts yelling at him, like, "You didn't, you know, empty the dishwasher," like something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. "You didn't do it. You've lost your privileges to stay at your friend's house. I'm coming there now." Mm-hmm. And picked him up. And then when his son got in the car, he just said, "Thank you. I'll explain later." Mm-hmm. And then they went home. And like, it turned out to be that like the friend's grandfather was like creeping the son out, and he's like, "It's not like he did anything inappropriate, right, he's just right, creeping right. me out. I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't want to sleep there." And so all he did was text his dad a hot dog, and he was out of there.
Yeah,
I have that code with my brother, and it's ours is a specific emoji that would probably never come up in conversation, but he sent it to me with a question mark. And when I had someone looking over my shoulder, if I said like anything wrong, I just felt like he was going to know that that was like a safety, like help me type thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, my brother and I had to type like, "I'm okay" back. Like, and I always spell okay, like OKAY. And my brother and I came up with a code after that he's like, "Okay, if this ever happens again, what do we do? Because you said that you were okay." And I was like, "Okay, so if I ever type okay and don't include that AY, then you know I'm not okay because I will never type just an okay. Mm. So like we have a code word for our code words now. And hopefully I never need to use them, but better safe than sorry.
Yeah. This is scary. It's just scary.
Scary world.
Yeah. But now you said you're doing better. You're okay taking Therapy's everything good. Day by day. Do all the extra things. I mean, I'm not your mother. I'm a mother. Do the extra things. Change your number. Don't let him contact you in any way. Just, I don't know. Get the fuck out of there.
That's the next step, I think. So.
Well, I appreciate you wanting to come on and tell your story. The reason
it's important,
you know,
for people to hear.
Yeah, the reason I gave the trigger warning at the beginning is, like Mark said, this might be more common than we even realize.
I think it's very common.
And like I said, I know too many people in my own personal life.
Well, that's what I mean.
Who have dealt with scary situations.
Like it's not like you know 1,000 freaking people. You've got a small handful of people that you're tight with and you're like, I've known this to happen too many times.
Yeah.
And then we're sitting in a profession where it's women dominated. Do you know what I mean? This has to be just like wildfire through our industry.
So do we have advice for women? I mean, screening before you book with somebody. The minute somebody, and you know what? I'm going to say this. The minute someone gives you any kind of creepy vibe, I see this all the time in Facebook groups. And I know Nikki's talked about this on her Unpopular Opinions episodes where people are like, oh, this person kind of creeps me out, but they haven't done or said anything. I don't care, man. Trust your gut. If somebody gives you creepy vibes, they're not your client. Get rid of them. Like, absolutely get rid of them. It's not worth putting yourself in potential danger because you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. Hurt their feelings. I don't care.
And then you have scenarios like this where Max has done nothing that would call upon any of this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, even unrelated, but back on like a safety topic, one of a girl that I know, brand new therapist, her first client that she took off of an app. I don't know if you have the app Soothe or Zeal up in Canada.
We have similar ones. We know what they are.
Yeah.
Her first ever client off of Soothe, the man was doing lines of cocaine in front of her before he got on the massage table, and he had a gun sitting out on the table, like right next to her. And she was uncomfortable that he was doing cocaine, but didn't feel safe leaving because he had a weapon. And she didn't know what to do. So she stayed there and did the massage. And she talked to us after. And she's like, what would you guys have done? And I'm like, man, as an outsider, if you asked me before my situation happened, I probably would have been like, I would have left. But if someone is under the influence and has a weapon within arm's reach, I don't know. Maybe I would have stayed there and done the massage as well, just out of a fear of him reacting because he's under the influence and has a weapon nearby.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's weird. Especially in the States, it's weird. Right? I've already seen in US Facebook groups, like people asking, hey, like, do you conceal and carry in your massage room?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's not something that we here really have to think about all that much. But yeah, I've seen that in a lot of the US Facebook groups.
I think we all just need to make sure that, like your advice to Rebecca, be aware of what you're posting. For example, you know, I mean, I understand why Max had to disappear from social media, but if you have an online presence and that's how you get clients and you want to stay online, just be aware of what you're posting. Are you really easy to find all the time? Do people know where you go personally? Do they know what gym you go to? Do they know what, you know what I mean? Like be aware of all these things that you're posting so that you are not going to potentially attract stalkers. Have a screening process, especially if you work alone. Like, don't just accept every client that comes through, you know, because you want to make sure you're not turning people away. Trust your gut on certain things. If somebody's giving you red flags, see them as red and run the other way. And make sure that people know where you are. You know, like Max brought up a good point of not wanting to be at her place of work alone. How many female therapists end up like being the last one working in the clinic late at night by themselves? Are the doors locked? Do people know you're there alone? Do you have like somebody who knows you're there or somebody that you can call if like you do feel unsafe? Like there's just things that we maybe don't think of because to us it's a job and we're not thinking about what could potentially go wrong. But even sometimes the most charming, wonderful people can be psychopaths.
This is a good example.
Well, and that's what I mean. There's people aren't going to show you that they're abusive and they're not going to show you the worst side of themselves if they're trying to gain your trust. So, I mean, we have to do everything we possibly can to be safe. And that's not to say don't have an online presence. And that's not to say don't work as a massage therapist, but safety should be at the top of your mind.
Be like, mindful.
All the time.
Be mindful that.
Yeah.
That these types of scenarios are very real, and they're very real possibilities, and you're never really shielded from them.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. My advice also on the social media side is something that Mark brought up earlier, but it is always like marketing. People always do say like, throw a little bit of personal stuff in with your business because it shows that you have a personal side and people like to see that. As massage therapists, separate it. Separate your personal from your work because these clients get attached in weird ways sometimes. And I'm sure we've all experienced a client that has formed some emotional attachment. And that's going to be even stronger or quicker to come on if they know anything personal about you. If they're following your business Instagram and you posted anything that they can associate to you that's not business, mm-hmm. It can lead down a slippery slope really quick.
Yeah. And it can be something as simple as like maybe I'm going to rethink me and my friends hanging out by the pool. Maybe that's not the picture I'm putting up.
Yeah.
Right? Stuff like that. I don't know. Which kind of sucks that you even have to, you know, that we're even suggesting, you got to be mindful of this stuff. But, you know.
In this day and age.
Yeah, but you do.
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
Well, thank you for wanting to share this story.
Yes, it's really appreciated.
And, I hope that for anybody that's listening, it just, you know, makes them think a little bit about being extra cautious in certain scenarios. And again, we're not trying to scare people, but this is reality.
Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I wish it was under a happier conversation.
Next time.
You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. Peace.